Keep that seat close to where you're at if you can, because there will be a couple more things we do in the service today that you'll do with that group of people you were just with. You go to Sam's, right? When you go into Sam's and start walking down the grocery aisles, they have all the people out there with the samples, and you can walk up and they can give you all kinds of tasty treats, and they just give you a little bite-sized morsel, and that kind of tastes good. But the whole idea is they're trying to say, man, if you like it, there's a whole case full of these in the freezer in the aisle down here, and you can grab a whole box and take them home. We know this is not a like a small group, like in a home, but this is kind of a sample. And I just kind of, I felt in the group of people that we meet every week as we put together our service, felt like for me to stand up here and lecture you for several minutes about what it's like to be in a small group or what it's like to do life with a small group of people would be kind of backwards if we didn't do something where you just experienced, had a sample of that this morning. And so if it's awkward and weird, hang in there. We're not going to ask you to do anything where you have to like divulge your deepest, darkest secret or anything like that today. But we hope that you just kind of feel like, hey, this was all right. I am not scarred for life or don't have any, you know, trauma at the end of the service. And I might could do this with a group of people, and we're just going to encourage you to do that. This is part of a series. Nick kind of set this up very well. We've been doing a series, and this is the last message called Gardening for Dummies, and we've got all our plants up here. And kind of the premise of the whole series has been this, that there are things that we need in our life, just like a garden. Man, what a great week. After several weeks of nothing but dry, hot weather, a whole week of rain, and we were driving up yesterday noticing how green, like where our park is in our neighborhood, it was brown, it was terrible, the grass was just ugly and hideous, and now it's green and looking great, and they're going to have to mow again, which could be a good or a bad thing, I don't know, but it's looking beautiful because rain came. We, you know, just like a garden needs rain, there's some things that we need in our lives, but no two of us, if we were to plant a garden in our backyard, would plant the same garden for the same reason. Some people might have a Zen garden where they can go have their, you know, little place of serenity and peace. Some people might like vegetables and grow just massive amounts of tomatoes and carrots and asparagus, which I still don't get. Some people might grow just a place that's full of flowers. That's my wife. We have spent a lot of money to have the prettiest front yard. We put in a new mailbox. We got to drive by our house. It looks great. It's a flower garden around it. And she just, my wife really loves the beauty of flower gardens with lots of mulch. And it's reeks of mulch in our yard, but it looks great. Everybody would garden for a different reason. The same way you and I are wired completely differently. And you and I are not the same. And the way we experience God is not going to be the same. I'm going to experience God in ways that fit my personality and who I am. You're going to experience God in ways that fit your personality and who you are. And so if I try to give you my path to God, my way of integrating these things into my life, as you try to do that, and you just try to do it the way I do it, it's probably going to be hard for you. God is a great God. He's a God that's bigger than any of us. He created us. He understands us. He knows us. He created you like you are, and he's crazy about you. He's so crazy that he sent his only son, Jesus, to pay the ultimate price so that you and I could have a renewed relationship with our Creator. And he created you like you are because he loves you the way you are, and he wants to relate to you the way you are, not the way I am. And so there are some things that we need in our lives, but we're going to experience those things in different ways. And the whole series has been a challenge to find your path. Start, if you aren't already integrating things like the Bible and prayer, and this morning we're going to talk about community. If you're not already integrating these things into your life, find ways to do it because these are the path to growth. And as we talk about community and talk about gardening, I'm kind of reminded, we went to Northern California earlier this summer, and one of the things we did, we took a short little day trip into a redwood forest. Oh my gosh, these trees are phenomenal. I mean, I've seen them in, you know, on the internet or on TV or, you know, when I was a kid, the largest trees in the world, and I remember seeing a picture of one of them that literally had a hole cut out where people drove through it, but being in the presence of these just unbelievable trees. In the forest that we went into, they had multiple trees that were over 300 feet tall, which means that the trees were as tall as a football field is long. And trees that the base of it, if I stood next to it, it dwarfed me. I mean, I was just this little bitty thing. We got a picture of me standing next to a tree, and the tree is just way on both sides of me, which is saying a lot. Okay, and so you know, these trees are just mammoth plants. They're just unbelievable to be in awe of the magnitude and the power and the beauty of these giant trees. But one of the things that I found out is that the redwood trees, while being just gargantuan plants, have a very interesting root system. Most trees, like if you have an oak tree in your backyard, you've probably figured out that the oak tree has very big and very deep roots that really burrow down and will find its way through rock and soil and get deep. And that becomes the foundation for a tree. And so you can grow an oak tree in your front yard and all that kind of stuff, but you could never grow a single redwood in your front yard and have it grow to be very big. And the reason is because the root structure of redwood trees is different than most trees. Instead of growing up, they grow out. In fact, most redwood trees, they don't have a root that's deeper than 10 feet deep, which for even little trees in your front yard would be very shallow. But redwoods don't go deep. What they do is they go sideways. And what happens is these great trees, they tend to grow in clumps. And literally the way they stay standing is the fact that their roots begin to intertwine and intermingle. And it is literally all the trees around them that holds up each individual tree. They cannot grow alone. They have to grow in clumps with groups, or they cannot survive and they can't grow to be the great redwood that they are. And I was thinking about that and realizing that really the Bible teaches us that as followers of Jesus, as people who want to figure out what it means to know God and to trust Him and for God to make a huge difference in our life, it is important for us to have a group of people that we intertwine with and get connected to. We are created to live that way. And so many people struggle in their Christian life, or even struggle if they're like exploring faith and trying to figure faith out. They struggle because they don't have a place where they can explore this and search this and struggle with it, where they feel safe and they feel loved. You know, no matter how messed up they feel like they are, how much they may struggle, there's a group of people around them that just really care about them and that they can just really try and struggle and even fail sometimes, and they still are going to be interconnected and interwoven and held up by that group. And that's what I want to talk to you. I think community, being part of a group, is one of the basic biblical teachings that we in our kind of Western American culture have missed, because we live in a culture where studies tell us that we come into contact, Americans, with more people than really any other culture, save maybe the Japanese, that literally we rub elbows with more people. But studies say that Americans are the loneliest people in the world. Now, I find that incredibly crazy, that, you know, people who live in Africa and you know, in huts or in Asia or in other places where there are not the masses of people and the busyness and the craziness, and they are involved with so many people, those people find a lot more satisfaction in relationship. And in America, where we have all these people at school and at work and at ball games and everything, we have all these relationships, but for some reason, we as Americans are the most lonely people on the face of this planet. And the reason I think that is true is because we have forgotten that God really created us for depth in relationships and not just a lot. And in that, for those who are following Jesus or trying to figure out what that looks like, it is real important to find a group where you can do that. The Bible's full of admonitions, challenges about this. In fact, one of the key words in the New Testament, which just kind of keeps popping up and you'll miss it, is a Greek word that means the word one another. You know, and the basic idea is that there are things that have to be done as a follower of Jesus, have to be done in the context of relationship with people. God saved us to give us a relationship with Himself, but He also saved us so that we could have relationships with others. These one another's, there's all kinds of them. This list I'm about to show you is not comprehensive. It's just a small slice of what the Bible tells us we should be doing to grow in relationships. Look at some of these. The one another's. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you, but through love serve one another. Galatians 5:13. Look at this. Therefore, welcome one another as Christ has welcomed you for the glory of God. We need to welcome one another. Look at this. Greet one another with a holy kiss. Now, focus on the greet one another. This is a cultural thing, okay? There were ways in ancient cultures that you would kiss. Like if it was somebody you had met for the first time, you would kiss cheeks. All right? If you had a deeper relationship, you would actually kiss on the lips. not here. This is not a literal verse. If you come and try to kiss me and your name's not Heidi, duck. I'm swinging, okay? Especially some of you younger guys. But what this, the idea is that we are in this depth of relationship that I literally want to look you eye to eye, and it is a deep enough relationship that I want to be close to you. I want to know you. No kissing, though, okay? Unless you're with your wife or girlfriend, we're cool with that, all right? But, you know, greet one another, all right? Bear one another's burdens. Man, you can't do that if you're not in relationship with people. I cannot really bear the burdens of somebody I don't know. Keep going. Love one another with brotherly affection. Outdo one another in showing honor. I love that. Try to better the other person in giving that other person honor, all right? Filled with all knowledge and able to instruct one another or teach one another. We need to learn from each other, all right? Submitting to one another out of the reverence for Christ. Be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another. That's the hard one for me, as God and Christ forgave you. And let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good deeds. We need to figure out how we can cheer each other on and shout. And I almost think of people at a ball game cheering for the person who's on the field saying, you can do it, go for it, hang in there. And we need to stir up one another to love and good works. Therefore, confess your sins to one another. Wow. Seriously? I need to have people around me that I can look in the eye and say, listen, I want to let you know how screwed up I really am. And they will still love me and pray for me and pray for one another. You cannot do these things. You cannot do these one another's that are there in the Bible unless you're in relationship. Go ahead. For we are members of one another, and there's the key. All these other one another's come down to this, that unless I have a group of people that I'm intertwined, my roots are intertwined with, if I'm trying to live the life of following Jesus as this lone soldier out here by myself, I'm not living as God created me to live. And God gave us a group of people. It's called the church. The church is not perfect people. We are all messed up here. Listen, I am as flawed, and I have as much struggles, and I have as much hurts, and I have much that I'd really like to hide as you do. I am not the hero, and you guys are trying to figure out how to learn from and live like me. If you're doing that, you don't understand what this is. I'm a fellow journeyer with you who I have hurts, and I have pains, and I have struggles, and I have nights where my kids don't do what I tell them to do, and I have nights where things just don't work right, and I have times where I'm depressed, and I have times where I utterly fail, and I need people that I can link arms with who look at me and say, how you doing? I love you. I'm here to hold you up, and I need to turn around and do the same thing to that group of people. That is a discipline. This is what we're getting at. In following Jesus, I need to find that group. I cannot do all these one another's in kind of general relationships with people that are out here. And we live in a culture that is craving this depth of relationship, but they don't know where to find it. And if they can look to us as followers of Jesus and see, man, you have that. I may not be crazy about Christianity because I think some Christians are really whacked out and weird, but I see that you have a group of people that you're really tight with. You get something from them. I'd like to figure that out. They'll be drawn to the real Jesus, not the Jesus that sometimes our culture projects, but the real Jesus who's just deeply passionate about you, loves you, and calls you into relationship. And so that's kind of what we want to talk about. Our culture's craving this. In fact, some of our favorite TV shows give us a picture of what it means to be in community. I go back to Cheers. You remember Cheers and the theme song where everybody knows your name? You know, and they formed a sense of community, a place where there was a depth of relationship in kind of a weird way with, you know, Norm and, the whole gang there. But there was a depth of relationship that was real, but there was always something that if we try to live out the way it worked at Cheers, it just doesn't quite work. And Seinfeld is a great community show. Here's a group of people who live in Jerry's apartment, and they have community with one another. And there's a depth of relationship that is very real. And we look at these shows, and we long for what they have. But when we try it, something doesn't connect. Something doesn't work like it does for them, because TV world isn't real. There's shows like Friends is another great show that was a show that was based on a group of people doing life together. And then the current one, of course, Hannah Montana. Everybody loves that one, right? all kinds of shows that show us what community might look like. But when we try to reproduce it, Hollywood's not real, and what Jesus offers is so much better. When we're talking about community, what I'm very specifically calling you to consider is this, that you need a group of people to explore faith and do mission with. That community is a group of people who are exploring faith, who are trying to figure out God and Jesus and life and faith together. And nobody has it figured out, but we're going to link arms with a group of people and do this journey together. And as we do that, we're also going to say, and God's called us to something that's bigger than ourselves, and this group of people, we're going to do it with them. And that's what I want to encourage you this morning. Some of you are already connected to a group. You need to hear this message as just a cheerleading. Keep it up. Stay connected. But some of you don't have a group like this, and I'm just encouraging you to consider this morning, even if you're a guest. It may be with Genesis, it may not. We're going to kind of tell you how you can get plugged in through Genesis at the end of the service, but you know, wherever you're at, find somebody that you can let those roots intertwine and you can be connected with each other and do faith, explore faith, and do mission together. A guy named, I found a quote. It said this, "God created us with a hunger for relationship. For relationship with him and with our fellow people. At the very core, we are relational beings. The soul cannot prosper without being connected to others." And so that's what, you know, I'm really encouraging you to do. Connect. Your soul cannot prosper unless we're connected to others. But there's all kinds of reasons why we won't get connected. All kinds of reasons why where we look at this, and you may be sitting here looking at this going, "I hear that, but man, I don't know." There's a lot of reasons it's hard for us to really link arms and get really involved. One reason is because of the rugged individualism of our culture. The fact that there's a very real sense that our culture's core message is this: be all that you can be. Live your life to the fullest. And we've kind of created this culture that says life is all about me as an individual. And even Christianity, I think of faith as how I can be the best that I can be, how I can serve God with my life. What does God want for me? And the truth of the matter is the Bible really has very little of that. Most of the time, instead of saying, "What does God want for me?" the Bible is asking, "What does God want for us? How can we serve God?" But we tend to see it through an individualistic lens, and we kind of think, man, self-esteem, self-driven, I can do this. And because of that, we just kind of have this mindset of, I don't really need a group. Another reason is busyness. And this is huge. I mean, I get this. My life is going 100 miles a minute. I think it was C.S. Lewis who said that busyness is maybe the greatest weapon the enemy uses in the lives of people, that we are just so busy, our lives are going so fast, there is so much on our plate. The idea of saying, I'm going to set aside an hour or two once a week or once every other week or whatever it is to be with a group is just insane. My life's nuts the way it is. How am I going to pull that off? Another reason maybe people disconnect is because of fear or frustration. They look around and they see, they've tried this before. They've gone to a group and it just was weird. There were some bizarre people who, you know, just felt like they just sucked the life out of you. Have you had that, you know? Or you've had a bad experience. You've gone to a group and you've kind of opened your soul up a little bit and maybe you got hurt. I actually had this happen once. I was part of a group and, you know, I was dealing with a struggle. It was kind of a secret area of my life where people didn't know what was going on. And I was with this group, and I felt comfortable with them. And so, you know, I just kind of let it out. I was like, you know, I've got this area of life that is a big struggle for me, and it's hard. And it was something that people would probably look at and go, oh, you know. And they did. That's exactly what they did. They looked at me like I had things growing out of my ears. And I resolved, I am never telling people my deep, dark secrets again. And maybe you've had, you know, some fear of frustration. Those are valid reasons. We want to encourage you to get beyond that. But what we'd like you to do for a minute is we'd like you to gather back with your group just for a second and talk about these. And we want you to kind of work through a question about these issues right now. The question is this. Which reason best explains any uneasiness you might have in getting involved in a group? And why? You may choose from the list I gave you, or you may have something that's totally different. But for about 3 or 4 minutes, we'd like you to gather back with the group you did a little bit earlier and talk about these issues. Which is the one, what issue for you makes it hardest for you to find a group of people to do faith with, all right? Go for it. And find a seat again. I know you could talk all morning, but then we'd be here till like, you know, noon, 12:30, 1 o'clock, and then you guys would be mad because you missed lunch, and we don't want to do that. You know, let me show you where we see this in American society. Houses that were built 40, 45 years ago, generally, and this is just a generalization, but generally, what was the dominant feature on the house? Front porch. You go to a neighborhood, and if they were building houses, they built front porches. Why? Because people put themselves in a place where they could get relationships. But as you build houses today, all the subdivisions that are new in Eureka, what is it now? Well, instead of a front porch, what do you have? You have a deck on the back. Away from, yeah, now the garage is the focal point of most of the houses. And there's a deck on the back that allows me to go into my own little cubbyhole, my own little world, and I have a place to be outside, but I have a place where I don't really have to interact with the people in the neighborhood. I mean, this is our culture. And what we're really calling and saying, listen, Jesus wants us to be involved in something that's a little bit countercultural, but people long for this. They're drawn to TV shows. They're drawn to stuff that say you can have this. I mean, the neighborhood bar, the neighborhood pub is all about this. And we believe that Jesus changes people's lives, and as he changes people's lives as a group, other people will be drawn to that. That's a good thing. And so where do we find this in the Bible? All right, you're saying, all right, Mike, I hear this, but maybe this is just your own idea. Well, let me start with the fact that Jesus himself believed in this, believed so much that he created a small group of people that were intertwined for a three-year period of time. They were intertwined. These are the 12 apostles. You may be familiar with the fact that Jesus called 12 guys. They spent 3 years of their lives walking with him. There's a verse in Mark that talks about this. Look at what it says. It says, he appointed 12 men whom he also named apostles, so they might be with him and he might send them out to preach. There is relationship in exploring faith, be with him, and he might send them out to preach, that they could go and do live the mission that Jesus was giving them. And he called these 12 guys, and they hung out with him for 3 years, and he taught. They saw him perform miracles. They saw all this stuff that he did, and they were moved by the presence of Jesus in their life in a real way. I mean, his physical as a person presence. And they were there when Jesus died on the cross. They were broken. They were hurting, and they retreated together, and for 3 days they hung out together in brokenness as their leader was gone. And 3 days later, when Jesus rose again, they experienced that together. They explored faith and they experienced the power of Jesus and his resurrection together. And what happens is that 11 of these guys, one guy betrayed Jesus. He was a guy that nobody's going to like. And listen, Jesus still included the guy who would betray him in his group. That's okay. We don't all have to look alike and think alike and talk alike. And maybe there's somebody in your group who is opposed to everything you stand for. That is okay. But the 11 who were left after Jesus rose again, just a short time later, actually about 50 days after Jesus' resurrection, they were hanging out in their town, Jerusalem, and God moved on their lives, and these 12 guys went out in the streets and began to preach. And the Bible teaches us that real fast, this first church, the very first church in the town of Jerusalem, the first followers of Jesus grew from 12 to about 120 to immediately, one day, grew to 3,000 people. That would be cool. That would be cool. But all of a sudden, you know, to just all of a sudden, all at once, all these people want Jesus. They're changed. God moves in their lives. They're excited about following Jesus. And the verses I'm about to read to you from Acts chapter 2, verses 42 through 47, talk about what took place with these 3,000 plus people who were new in the faith, with the followers of Jesus, the apostles kind of as their leaders. What did their life and their faith look like in the first few days after Jesus rose again? We cannot duplicate this, but what we can do is hear what happens in that church and see how I need this group to be intertwined with so I can do some of these things. All right, so if you have a Bible, go ahead and turn to Acts chapter 2, verses 42 through 47. If you don't have a Bible, at the end of your row, we have Bibles for you. We would love for you to take one of those Bibles. If you don't have a Bible at home that you understand or that is good for you, or yours is kind of old or beat up, or you'd like one that you can just mark up, or you'd like to take a Bible and just give it to a friend, those are there as our gift to you. We'd love for you to take that home and use it or give it away. In that Bible, we will be on page 780. So we look at Acts chapter 2, and the story after these 12 guys, or these 11 guys, began to preach and share Jesus and share their faith. And all of a sudden, this church has just expanded in one day to 3,000 people. What happened in that church that moved them from being a small group in Jerusalem to a force that literally would change the whole world? And it is this. Verse 42. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching, fellowship, the breaking of bread, and the prayers. It starts off by saying, man, there was a devotion, a connection to, first of all, the apostles' teaching. Well, the apostles' teaching, at this point in time, they did not have the New Testament, which is the second part of our Bible. They had the Old Testament, which was, this was the Hebrew Scriptures. As God had shown himself to the Jewish people, the Old Testament, they had in their hands. And what happened, the apostles' teaching is simply this. They took the Old Testament and they exposed the main character. They began to take the Old Testament and show everybody how Jesus was the main character of the Old Testament, even though sometimes you couldn't see him on every page. The fact that everything in the Old Testament pointed to the fact that Jesus was coming. This was the apostles' teaching. And so basically it is us, you know, is the idea that they got into understanding the scriptures in light of Jesus. The apostles' teaching, the breaking of the apostles' teaching, fellowship. This is a word that means being so closely connected, and they were devoted to being connected with one another. Breaking of bread, that's communion. That is celebrating, worshiping Jesus through taking the bread, the cup, and remembering the sacrifice that Jesus made. And prayers, they prayed together. Verse 43, all came upon every soul, and many wonders and signs were being done through the apostles. God was blessing their ministry in such a great way that literally there were miracles taking place. And people were awed by this. Verse 44, all who believed were together and had all things in common. Man, what? How cool would it be to be part of a group of people that were so connected? You could say, man, they were together and they had all things in common. And they were selling their possessions and belongings and distributing the proceeds to all as any had need. They literally were so connected with one another that if they saw their a friend who was in the faith, or even a friend who wasn't, but they were struggling, they were hurting, they were willing to sell stuff off. I mean, these weren't wealthy people, but they were willing to sell stuff off to make sure this person had food and had care for their family and had needs covered, and that they weren't going to go hungry and they weren't going to go hurting, and that they would take care of the needs for one another. Verse 46, day by day, attending to the temple together and breaking bread in their homes, they received food with glad and generous hearts. Now, here's the deal, and this is... we key a lot of who we are off of this passages. But what was happening is that on a regular basis, they were gathering in a public place to worship together. That place was the temple. They almost daily would show up at the temple. A little later in the scriptures, it actually shows us where at this place called Solomon's Colonnade. It's kind of an outer wall of this huge building that was the center of Jewish worship. And they would gather at this one wall, and the apostles would begin to preach and teach and talk about the Old Testament and point to Jesus. And they would all be there, and they would listen, and they would grow, and people were being added. They were, you know, people were coming to faith in Jesus every day. But then, as groups, they were going to homes, and they were fleshing out what they heard in the temple in smaller groups of people inside homes. That's what we do. We have a meeting in a public place. I get asked a lot, are you ever going to have your own church? Well, we are a church because a church is not a building, it's people. But I really love the fact that we meet in a place of the public commerce in Eureka. The fact that we meet in Eureka High School. The fact that we can interact with people in Eureka High School. We can be involved in them, that people know we're here, that we can get involved. We're looking at all kinds of ways of being part of the culture that is Eureka, and especially the high school here. Next month, our church, we are doing the concession stand for the homecoming football game. We're going to be in there serving people so that the parents who normally serve in there can go out and watch their kids play football or be on pom-poms, whatever it is. But we gather in this public place, the place of public commerce. But the other thing we do is we have these groups that meet in homes where people can explore faith and walk through this together. All right? And so I just think it's important that we're part of both. That's how we get connected to God and the people of God. And so what's going on here is that they're doing that. Verse 47 says, praising God, having favor with all the people, and the Lord added to their number day by day those who were being saved. And this is how God moved in the lives of people. They met in the temple. They met in homes. They had the huge gathering. They had smaller groups that met and lived and explored and worked through faith together. They focused on learning the Bible and prayer and worship and being connected to one another and praying for one another. And God used that to open the Christian faith. People being followers of Christ, that literally they reproduced this model all over the world in the next 30 years. So that by 30 years from this date, almost every major city around has somebody who's following Christ in a church with a small group of people in almost every significant town. And reproducing this. They're meeting in the synagogues and in public places, and they're meeting from home to home. And that's what we hope to have happen here, and we hope that you'll consider being a part of that. So what I want to do just real fast, and I'm not going to give a details. I'm going to show you the core purposes of our community groups, our groups that meet. We right now have two community groups. We're new. We're growing. We're hoping to start at least one or two new ones in the next few weeks. But here's why our groups meet and what they're about and what they're trying to do with the time that they come together. And the first thing is that they're a place of connection. At the very heart of it, our groups are there so that a group of people can come together and intertwine the roots. Our first passion is not that these are home Bible studies. Groups do study. I'm not saying they don't look in the Bible. But a lot of times groups will say, hey, we're just going to be a Bible study, and it's not a place where I can explore faith. I just hear a teacher giving me a whole bunch of information. And we hope to take the things you're struggling with and learning and the scriptures and give you a place to interact and grow in that. Not all of our groups are alike, but like in my group right now, what we're doing is we meet on a Wednesday night, and we would literally are just taking a list of questions from the Sunday morning message, what happens here, and talking about how do I make this fit in my life and how do I apply it. And so it's a place of connection, a place where people get intertwined and they do life and faith and they grow together and all that kind of stuff. Second thing is spiritual formation. We hope our groups are a place where people literally struggle with faith and figure out how to grow the way God has wired them. So spiritual formation is a big issue and a big purpose, a big emphasis. A third thing is prayer. We want our groups to pray together. We want our groups to find ways that they're taking their needs to God and they're doing it as a group. Something happens when a group really takes the deep heart issues. They see God as the solution and they do that together and they pray. A fourth thing is community. Now, this whole message has been about community and the fact that you need community, and then I'm going to throw the word out again and I'm going to redefine it a different way for you. What I mean here in our purposes, that one of the purposes of a community group is community, is that we want the group to see the neighborhood, the community which it meets, wherever the house is, as a launch for doing mission right there. So for example, my group, we meet at my house. I live on Top Notch. And part of what our group does is we have people from all over, but we have kind of adopted the Top Notch neighborhood as a place to kind of just get out and meet people and do stuff. We've had some cool things where we've helped like with neighborhood block parties. We went down and did face painting at a party they did for kids one time. We did a kids club in our neighborhood, and it was mostly our community group that helped with it. Community, that we are seeing the community where I'm located as a place for us to live our mission together, all right? Ministry, number five is ministry. The fact that this is the basic place where when people in our church have needs, they're getting met. So say, there have been times where this happens. Say somebody in my group has an illness and mom's sick and dad's still working. Our group will take responsibility for saying, you know, we're going to go and we're going to take some meals to their house. We're going to take care of the kids. We're going to help them with the struggles that they have. We're going to minister, serve one another. It might be that, you know, there's a family that's in our community group. Man, they have had a crisis, financial crisis, and they're not making ends meet, and they got a bill coming. And it might be that our community group says, man, we're going to pull together some resources, and maybe we'll all cut corners for a month so that that family can make it through this crisis. I've seen that happen. That's what we want to happen in our groups, ministry. Another thing is compassion. The fact that every group has a way that they are serving the greater world and the greater needs. Our group is talking about, there's a single mom in our neighborhood, and our group is talking about going down later this month and literally going in and cleaning her house, doing all her yard work, painting a couple rooms, maybe even staining her deck, just giving ourselves away to somebody. Our youth community group, every Thursday night, once a month on a Thursday night, they go to one of the senior homes, the elderly homes here in Eureka, and they just play games for an hour and a half with these residents. And as we were doing the parade yesterday, they were all sitting underneath a canopy, all these ladies that they go and play Monopoly and Scrabble and checkers with. And those ladies knew who we were, and it was pretty cool. So compassion. And then the last thing is leadership development. We feel like our community groups are the best place for you, especially if you're kind of new in this church thing and you're like, you know, I can't really take a job in a church. It's a great place for you to kind of figure out your giftedness and your sense of who you are and how you can serve God and love people. That's a great place when you're in a group of 8, 10, 12 people to kind of try something and do something where it's just a little simpler and a little easier, and you can be developed as a leader. This is what we hope happens in all of our community groups. This series has been called Gardening for Dummies. We've just really been trying to encourage you that there are some things you need in your life if you're going to grow. We hope that you'll get Velcroed to the Bible, that all of a sudden you just are kind of stuck and you find a way to interact with God by spending time reading and memorizing and knowing the scriptures. There's all kinds of ways to do that. If you're like, I need to do that, go back and listen to that message. It gave all kinds of ideas. There's also the fact that we need to be relational with God in prayer. You need to find ways that prayer is meaningful for you and then start integrating that into your life. Last week, we talked about the fact that I need to have an outflow of my faith to other people through sharing my faith, through serving people, through just being involved in the lives of people who maybe don't know Jesus, and maybe being careful that I am relational with people who don't agree with me, just so that they kind of hone the edges off of me as I think I have all of life figured out because I have the Bible and I don't. This week we're saying it's important for you to find a group of people to be intertwined with. At Genesis, that's community groups. That may not be the best thing for you, but maybe it is, and maybe you might want to give it a try. Part of what we're doing is we're using this service as a way to launch an emphasis on getting people signed up and connected to community groups. In your worship folder, you actually got to sign up for it. If you're already in a community group, you don't need to fill that out. You may need a couple weeks to pray about it. You may not feel like this morning is the time to fill it out. But we've put that there so that if you are kind of like, you know, I hear what you're saying, and you're right, I need to integrate this in my life. I'm busy. I live as an individualistic person, kind of think my own way is all I need. Or, man, I've been hurt, and I'm a little leery, but I hear you. I know that I need to get some people that I intertwine my roots with. We put that in your worship folder this morning so that you just have a nice, easy, simple way to say, I'd like to give this a try. You can fill that out. When our offering baskets are passed in a few minutes, you can put it right there in the offering basket. We'll also have baskets on the way out. You can hold on to it for a couple weeks and bring it back at another time. You may choose to email me if you forget to do this or you want to think about it. And you may just say, hey, I can do it, and here's some nights I might be able to do it. On that sheet, it asks you for the nights you could meet, what possible times might work. And it also asks, hey, would you be interested or willing to host or to lead a group like this? Check whatever boxes fit for you and drop that in, and we'll find a way to integrate you into either a group that's already meeting or a new group and give you a place where you can get those roots intertwined, all right? I hope you're challenged by that, and I hope that'll happen. This morning, as part of our service, we told you we were just giving you kind of a sample, and one of those samples is we're going to do communion. You're going to do it with the group that you've been with. Communion is a big deal because it was something that Jesus gave his followers specifically so that they could stop and remember the incredible price of grace. The fact that I can't earn heaven, and even attending a group or reading the Bible doesn't get me connected to God. Only Jesus does. And so, communion is a time for those who are already followers of Jesus to reflect on life and to participate. If you're here and you're not a follower of Christ, you're still exploring faith, we would encourage you just to use this time to focus and dwell and think. And you may be here this morning, you may be a little uncomfortable with doing communion, and that's okay too. But if you are comfortable with it, we're going to ask you to do it in your groups. And basically what's going to happen is our group leaders are going to stand again. They're going to pray for you, that we want you, them to pray for you guys as a group. Just pray that God has spoken to you and just pray for you all. And then they're going to come down, they're going to get one of the cups and one of the loaves. The band's going to come out, they're going to do a song that helps us think about communion and what it's all about. While that's taking place, if you want to participate, they'll be on the aisle just kind of closest to where your group is meeting. You just kind of slip out, take the bread, dip in a cup, think about Jesus, deal with any issues in your life that you need to repent and just trust him with, and just let the image of the blood and the body of Jesus take hold of you. But then give thanks that God's given you at least this morning a little taste of what it might be like to do faith, explore faith, do mission with a group of people. I'm going to pray. Actually, I'm not going to pray. I'm going to walk off stage. Your leaders are going to pray for you, and then we're going to do that. All right? Go for it.